सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ समस्तजनकल्याणे निरतं करुणामयं नमामि चिन्मयं देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरम्। हरि ओम्। सो टुडे वी आर स्टार्टिंग अ न्यू उपनिषद, कठोपनिषद। टुडेज टॉक आई विल मेनली फोकस ऑन इंट्रोडक्शन टू इंट्रोडक्शन टू दिस कठोपनिषद एंड ऑल्सो वॉट इज द बेनिफिट ऑफ स्टडिंग उपनिषद एंड दिस स्पिरिचुअल नॉलेज। फर्स्ट ऑफ ऑल, वॉट इज कठोपनिषद एंड वाई डिड इट गेट इट्स नेम? कठ has many meanings, many interpretations. One is, there was a rishi, Katha, who is said to have revealed this knowledge. Katha is also a shakha, a branch of Krishna Yajurveda. That Krishna Yajurveda has many shakhas, many branches, and one of those branches is called Katha Shakha. Katha also means distress. So the student who goes to Yamaraja, he Nachiketa, we do the story next week, but he goes with distress because he's worried about his father, what his father is doing. And also his father tells him, I'm sending you to Lord Death. So for that distress, he is going. Katha also has been interpreted as Katha. Katha means story, that's in all Indian languages. So it starts with a story of Nachiketa and Yamaraja, which in lot of detail is covered. And that is how this knowledge is revealed to the student Nachiketa and through him to all of us. Also, it is the most popular among all the Upanishads. There are 108 actually that are known, but they say at least 400 to 500. It is the one that is translated in more foreign languages than any other Upanishad. It was first translated into Persian in the 17th century, in 1600. And then from there, it went to different parts of Europe and Middle East. It has been translated into several languages throughout the world. It is also studied in many parts of the world. Now, Nachiketa, we'll hear more about him next week, but the word Nachiketa has been translated as that which cannot decay, cannot perish, or cannot be vanquished, cannot be defeated. So the student is one who has the courage to face all situations to get this knowledge. No matter what comes in front of him, he is determined to get this knowledge. Also, it is Bhagwan Shri Krishna's favorite Upanishad, because in the Bhagavad Gita, there are maximum shlokas taken from Kathopanishad, maximum references. So those of us who are studying Bhagavad Gita, we'll see a lot of shlokas, mantras of the Kathopanishad, which are used in the Bhagavad Gita by Bhagwan Shri Krishna. It is also one of the major Upanishads. Major means there are 10 major Upanishads. Does not mean that these 10 are major and other Upanishads are minor. What it means is these 10 Upanishads had a detailed bhashya by Shankaracharya ji. And that's why we owe a great debt of gratitude, because of his bhashya alone, we were able to study this Upanishad, and he makes it easy for us. And the acharyas of the Chinmaya Mission who have given us this knowledge have based their teachings on Shankar Bhashya. Also, this Upanishad is one of the larger ones. you know, I mean, the largest is Brihadaranyaka, but it has 120 mantras. For an Upanishad, that is long, because the earlier Upanishads, Kain Upanishad and Ishavasya, we have seen they have 10, 15, 20 mantras, but this has 120 mantras. Also, the interesting thing about this Upanishad is there is no Upasana. Some of the Upanishads talk about Upasana, but this is purely knowledge, Jnanam. And what is this Jnanam, we'll study in the next few weeks. And the word Upanishad, everybody is familiar with, but I'll just briefly say Upa means near. Ni means Nishchayena, with determination, and Shat means destruction. So student approaches the teacher with determination to destroy all his negativities, his ignorance, his all his wrong ideas, misconceptions, all get destroyed by his contact with the Guru. Also, the Upanishads are said to be hidden or secret, like Bhagwan in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita also says Raja Guhyam. So Guhyam or secret does not mean that it should be kept secret. What it means is that a person who is not interested in this knowledge should not be given the knowledge. You should not force somebody to say, oh, come and sit, I'm going to teach you about Upanishad. In fact, Bhagwan in the Bhagavad Gita had stayed with Arjun for so many years. They grew up together, but no time he said, oh, you know, sit down here, I want you to learn Bhagavad Gita. Only when Arjuna asks him, Shishyasteham Shadimam Tvam Prapannam, I bow down to you, prostrate to you to get this knowledge. So this knowledge should be given to a student who is interested. Secondly, if a student gets this knowledge, say randomly, he's not interested, but somehow he gets this knowledge, the knowledge won't stick to him. That's why when Gurudev was teaching the Upanishads, in fact, he started his discourses first with Prashnopanishad in Pune in 1950. And when he was asked, why are you teaching Upanishads to all, everybody, some of them are not deserving, Gurudev says, this Shruti has a way of protecting herself. The one who is not qualified, who is not deserving, it will go in 1 year, come out the other year, he won't come back. At the most, he might come for one or two discourses. He won't be interested. Then, what is the purpose of studying Upanishad? What is the reason or the goal or the purpose? So the main purpose of studying Upanishad is to take us out of samsara. Samsara means this transmigration that we all go through, this birth and death, and millions of lives we have gone through, you know, 88.4 million lives we have gone through before we get human birth, and then we don't know how many human births we have. In fact, Gurudev in the introduction to one of the other Upanishads says that, he says, you all are very blessed to have the opportunity to study the Upanishads. Gurudev says, you must have done a lot of punya in this life and past life that you have the opportunity. So we are so blessed to have Puja Gurudev's commentary and the teachings of all the Chinmaya Mission Acharyas, because of which we are able to study this Upanishad. So it is takes us out of the cycle of transmigration, birth and death. Now, what is Upanishad? They say Upanishad Pramanam for Atma Jnanam, for Vedanta. The Pramanam is Upanishad. What is Pramana? What is the word Pramana? Pramana means of knowledge, method of knowing. So in Sanskrit, there are four connected words. Pramanam is the means of knowledge. Pramata is the knower. The one who wants to get this knowledge is called Pramata. So Pramata using Pramanam comes to know Prameya. Prameya means that which is to be known. And the fourth, when Pramata is there, Pramanam is there, Prameya is there, the goal is there, then the knowledge that occurs through the study of the Upanishads and the Guru's Upasatti is Prama. So pramanam, pramata, prameya, and prama, the knowledge. So what is pramanam? So the example we can give, okay, this is a cell phone. How do you know that? Oh, from my eyes, because I have seen cell phones before. I know what a cell phone looks like. So the eyes are pramanam, to see. But what I am talking, you can't see with your eyes. You are listening with your ears. So for listening, ears are pramanam. For taste, tongue is, and so on. So each sense organ can only do one thing. Eyes cannot hear, ears cannot taste. Food you cannot put through your nose. If you put, you know, a lot of bad things will happen. So the means of knowledge is exclusive. So one means can only get one knowledge. So what is Upanishad? It is the pramana for self-knowledge. It is the means to attain self-knowledge. And what is this knowledge? Who am I? What is this Atma? When we have all heard many times that I am not this body, because that was our understanding before we started studying Vedanta, that I am this body, mind, intellect. Even after hearing Vedanta, when problems occur at the physical, mental, or intellectual level, we very quickly get deluded, and we get so caught in that physical problem or emotional, somebody, you know, does not love me, doesn't talk to me well, or intellectually, somebody is smarter than me, I don't understand, then our mind gets very quickly disturbed and attached to the body identification or mind or intellect. So very clear knowledge of who am I, which is without doubt. See, that is very important, that this knowledge should have no doubt. That's why we say Shravana Manana Nididhyasana. Shravana is to remove ignorance, Mananam is to remove doubts, and Nididhyasam is to remove my wrong identification, my wrong notions about who am I. So all those three are required, and it should be doubt-free knowledge. It should be knowledge that cannot be contradicted by any other means. Like what I see with my eyes, I see a blue color, that cannot be contradicted. What I hear, it could be, you know, somebody is giving me something wrong, and then somebody else comes and says, oh, that was wrong, this is right. So that knowledge by hearing can be contradicted, or by seeing, sometimes, like, you know, the sun, we say, rises in the east and sets in the west. But that knowledge is contradicted by science, because they say sun doesn't rise or fall. It is the earth that is rotating. But the knowledge of who am I has to be uncontradicted, without doubt. And if there is doubt, then that knowledge is not complete. Like I go to a doctor and, you know, I have some shortness of breath. And so the doctor looks at me and examines me and does some tests. He says it could be a part problem with your heart, or maybe problem with your lung, or maybe you are not accessible. You know, if he gives me 3-4 diagnoses, you never go back to that doctor. You say, doctor, tell me once and for all, is this my heart, lung, what is it, and what should I do? Or if I want to go to San Francisco, and somebody says you can go on I-5, but then if you go on 101, he gives me 2-3 choices, then again, you know, you won't ask him. You want to know clearly what is the fastest and the clearest route to San Francisco. So same way, this Upanishad is the fastest and clearest route to who am I, this self-knowledge. And the explanation by Yamaraja in this Upanishad is very, very simple. It's not very complicated. It's not very difficult. Very beautiful, simple explanations are given. And what is this knowledge? One, our knowledge is memory. You know, I remember something, what my childhood or my youth or what I did and what I didn't do. But here, the knowledge of the Upanishads, the knowledge of the self, is right now. I have to know this, what it is right now, not from memory, but the knowledge that should happen in the moment, in the present, I am. That's why they say, I am that, you know, aham brahmasmi. Not I will become Brahman or as I was Brahman, but I am Brahman, I am that. So the knowledge has to be now and in the present. And the teacher also says, tatvamasi. You are that. Not tatvam bhavishyasi, not that you will become that, but you are that. So the knowledge of the Upanishads is in the present and without any contradictions. Now, in the knowledge, there are six methods of knowing anything. I mean, we have kind of, some of you must have heard it, but just to briefly summarize, there are six methods of knowing anything. One is called Pratyaksha Pramana. What is Pratyaksha Pramana? Pratyaksha, what is in front of my eyes, what I can see or what I can hear, smell, taste, touch with my senses, what I know, is called Pratyaksha Pramana. And that is our main source of information, of getting knowledge by seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, reading, you know, internet, newspaper, all that depends on Pratyaksha Pramana. Then there is Anuman Pramana. The famous example is smoke and fire. If on the hill I see some smoke, I'm driving, say, to, you know, I-5 down south, and in the mountains, I see some smoke, I understand, oh, there is a forest fire somewhere. And so smoke and fire is Anuman. So I have previous knowledge of smoke and fire being together. So that is my Anuman. That is my understanding. Again, that depends on Pratyaksha. I have in the past seen smoke and fire. Then Upama. Upama is by example. So like a person who has gone to Africa and he has seen a zebra, and I have never seen a zebra. I don't know what a zebra is like. So he comes back and he tells, I saw a zebra. I say, what does a zebra look like? So he says, well, it's a horse with lines, you know, horse wearing a night suit with a line. So that is zebra. So that is the Upama. So horse with lines is zebra. So comparative, what I have seen, what I already know, then that same knowledge is used as a comparison. So again, that depends on Pratyaksha. I have seen something. Then Arthapatti. Arthapatti is cause and effect. Like you have slept at night and you wake up in the morning and you look out the window and the grass and the lawn and your patio looks wet. So what do you assume? Either it rained last night or my sprinklers are broken. So one or the other. So that is cause and effect. Arthapatti, that is called cause and effect. The fifth one is absence. Like we have people who say, who regularly come to this class, and then today he or she is not here. Then you say, where is that person? They say he's absent. So through absence, and then you ask, why is he absent? Maybe he's sick or maybe he's out of town. So that is the fifth one, absence. Now, all these five depend on Pratyaksha Pramana. I should have seen something and depend on my seeing. The sixth one, which is the Shabda Pramana, but Shabda can be two kinds. One is Laukik and one is Vedic. So Laukik means worldly. So my knowledge about physics, chemistry, mathematics comes from textbooks, from my teacher, high school, college, politics, economics. So all that is Pramana, that is the testimony by worldly things, like newspapers or textbooks or internet or teachers who are teaching me in school and college. But the testimony given in the Upanishads is the Vedic testimony, not Laukik. Laukik means worldly. Vedic means which is out of this world, which is the knowledge which cannot be obtained in the world. It has nothing to do with the world. And that is the, that's why they say this Pramana is the one that is not worldly. But it is otherworldly, it is outside this world. And what does, and we say this is Atma Jnanam, the knowledge of the self. So where does Atma fit in these six? It cannot fit in the first five because Atma cannot be perceived. So there is no pratyaksha, anuman, there is no comparison, because Atma or the self or Brahman is one. There is no comparison, there is no cause and effect. Again, because it's consciousness clear. Itself does not do anything. So there is no creation, as we have studied and will study again in this Upanishad. So Atma cannot be perceived, and Atma is also never absent. So even the fifth one, even though we don't see Atma, we don't perceive Atma. Some people say, well, how do we know there is Atma or there is Brahman or there is consciousness? It is never absent because it is my true nature. It is always with
existence.
Me. And people say, I want to know Atma. I want to reach Atma. I want to acquire Atma. I want to study up. Atma is already attained, is always with us. That's why we are able to walk, talk, think, all that. All we have to do is know that I am Atma, realize that I am Atma, and abide in that knowledge. And that only happens with the contact with the Guru and with the scriptures. And as we know, Shruti's Upanishads are called Shruti because they were revealed to the masters in their meditation. When they sat in their meditation, they heard this from the cosmos, from the higher source, from the Lord himself. And then they passed it on to students. And then the students memorized it, and then they passed it on from student to teacher. And that happened for many, many years until Ved Vyasji came and said that this knowledge will get lost, because memory was good when we were living in the calm atmosphere of the ashram by the river bank, you know, in the mountains. But once people started living in the cities, life became urbanized, then it thought that memory alone will be enough was not adequate. So Ved Vyasji is the one who organized these Upanishads into the four Vedas, organized the four Vedas, and put the Upanishads at the last part of the Veda. And as we said, this is Shukla Krishna Yajur Veda, that is where this Upanishad appears. Now, how do we get this knowledge? So they say, first of all, one should approach a teacher with humility, with surrender. You know, please reveal this knowledge. Upanishad Bruhi, even we just heard in the Kain Upanishad, the student says, please reveal this knowledge. And not only that, but is there any auxiliary knowledge that I need to get? So one has to approach the Guru Upsakti, approach the teacher with humility, with surrender, and with the idea that I don't know, and only Guru, you can teach me. So listening is very important with attention. Then my mind should be calm. If I'm sitting and my mind is disturbed or angry, or I'm thinking about something or else, then if my mind is not there 100%, then this knowledge will not register. So I should listen. Then while I am listening, my mind and senses should be under my control. I shouldn't be thinking about, oh, what is going to happen, what happened, or I'm looking here and there, you know, while that is going on, the Upanishad Jnana, I'm looking out the window or listening to some music, you know, with my iPod and all. No, that's not. It has to be, the mind and senses have to be fully in the study of the Upanishads. And then one should have done some meditation and yoga. Meditation is always beneficial because it helps to clarify and abide in this Upanishad knowledge. Whatever knowledge I have gotten, to abide in that, stay in that, is required. And yoga does not only mean physical yoga, but masters interpret yoga as concentration of mind. So mind has to be focused, has to be concentrated upon this knowledge. And also yoga means my mind should be attached to the higher. My goal should be that through this knowledge of the Upanishad, it's not done to become a teacher or to show off. The idea is to reach Bhagwan, reach my true nature. Then what else should we do? So they say good actions. Again, we had last week also, we had talked about how Satyam and all the good actions are required. So for study of the Upanishads, one should bring our life towards goodness. So do good deeds and avoid things that are forbidden. Then certain amount of worship of the Lord is very beneficial. Doing some puja, sitting in front of the Lord, even for 5-10 minutes in the morning, or if you can do the, depending on how much time, you know, do all the steps or few of the steps, do some aarti, you know, offer some prasad and, you know, things like that. So some amount of surrender and reverence for the Lord is very beneficial in this spiritual path. Then one should listen. And the idea is that, again, listening is that I should abide in this knowledge. So this knowledge should become my knowledge. Right now it is Shankaracharya ji's knowledge, Puja Gurudev's knowledge, or the Rishi Katha's knowledge. It should become my knowledge and I should bring it into my daily life. So this studying is not just for studying and then, okay, to check mark. Okay, I studied Kain, I studied Ishavasya, now Katha bhi ho gaya. Not like that. It should be to abide in this knowledge. And I should be established. Pratitishthati, last Upanishad we said, such a person always abides and remains established in pure knowledge. What is pure knowledge and what is knowledge of? So when we study physics, chemistry, biology, that is knowledge of something else. Here, knowledge is not of something else. Knowledge is pure knowledge, what I am. So again, that is not something of something else, but is my true nature. I am already that, and that we have forgotten. So the teacher reminds us of this knowledge. Now the Gurudev in his commentary says that the difference between the theories of the Western, where the knowledge keeps on changing, different things like Freud and then Huxley and different Chinese, different philosophies come. But the Upanishad knowledge is woven into our life. So this knowledge is woven into our life, into who we are, and it becomes part of the life. And that is why Gurudev says that even though so many people came to India, conquered India, and tried to convert us, the Muslims tried, the Christians tried, the Greeks tried, so many invaders came and tried to convert us, but we were remained firm in this knowledge because this Upanishad knowledge is, had become woven into the life of the people. So, you know, so that's why. So once it has become part of your life, then it is difficult for people to take it away from you. And that's why, even despite all their efforts, majority of Indians did not convert and remained true to their Sanatan Dharma. Even for the last, you know, few thousand years, several hundred years, they have tried and not been successful. Also, the language of this Upanishad, as we will see as we go along, is very artistic. Mm. It's very, very beautifully conveyed, this knowledge, and very, the quality of the Sanskrit and the quality of the verses and the chanting is very, very beautiful. We'll see as we go along. And also it is a dramatic, it is dramatized how the Nachiketa gets this, sees the problem with his father, and then he's sent to Yamaraja, and then how Yamaraja tries to dissuade him. And another quality of Nachiketa, which is very important, is extreme vairagya, tremendous vairagya. To get this knowledge, you have to be an adhikari. And the most important quality for a student is vairagya, dispassion. And he was a fit Adhikari, and Yamaraj tries his best to dissuade him. But Nachiketa is firmly convinced that that's what I want. And as we will see, he offers him horses, long life, kingdom, whatever he wants. He says, keep all that. Just give me the knowledge. I don't want anything else. And that kind of determination when one has, then this knowledge will reveal itself. And this Upanishad gives us happiness, gives us joy. You know, external happiness objects can give us, but the true internal permanent happiness, permanent joy, that only can come from studying this kind of a text. So joy and sorrow. So we are all looking for freedom from sorrow and getting joy. So this Upanishad is the best means for us to remove our sorrow and get joy, get happiness. Talking about joy and sorrow, there was this two men, Tom and Harry. And Tom meets good friends, and Tom meets Harry, and Harry looks very depressed. He says, what happened? He says, you know, my company went bankrupt. You know, I'm in big trouble. My company's bankrupt. Tom says, it could have been worse. So after a month, he meets Harry again, and Harry looks more depressed. He says, what happened now? He says, my house burned down. I lost all my possessions. Tom says, it could have been worse. So after some time, he meets Harry after 2 months, and Harry is almost crying and can't even talk. He says, what happened now? He says, my wife left me for another man. She says she doesn't want to live with a loser. Tom says, it could have been worse. So he holds him by the collar. He says, how could it have been worse? You know, I lost my company, became bankrupt, my house burned down, my wife left me. How could it have been worse? Tom says, it could have happened to me. That's how it. So one man's sorrow is another man's joy. So Upanishad gives us the true joy, which will take away all sorrows, external, internal sorrows. Everything will be removed by this. That's why they say, this knowledge gives us true bliss. Again, happiness not depending on objects, but happiness which is our true nature, that is bliss, and that is not dependent on things, and that does not fluctuate, does not depend on people, objects, position, power. It is my true nature and will not fluctuate with circumstances. And this knowledge gives me freedom to grow. You know, we grow materially, we grow physically, we grow intellectually, get a lot of knowledge. But very few people are there who want to grow spiritually. That's why when, at Diwali also, they say, may you have happy and prosperous New Year. One should wish, may you grow spiritually. That is the main growth that one should have. Everything else is okay, we need, but how am I growing spiritually? And every new year, we should go back and look that in this past year, have I grown spiritually? Have I studied more? Is my mind calmer? Am I closer to God? Am I closer to truth? So that is how yesterday was the new year after the day after Diwali. So that is the time to reflect and retrospect and think. And also this Upanishad not only tells us the knowledge, but also the technique, how to reach this highest goal that is explained. And a very logical analysis of man is done through this knowledge. As we know, we have four aspects, the physical, the emotional, the intellectual, and the spiritual. And we know that the physical is most important. We take care of the body, but also when the emotional issues come, one drops one's physical comfort, like a mother is running out of a burning house. And then suddenly she remembers, my daughter is still sleeping. And she will run back even though the firemen will try to stop her. She will risk her body. Why? Because she loves. So emotional attachment, love becomes stronger than her physical comfort. Even she's ready to risk her life to save the mother, save the daughter. Then intellectually for the country, you know, for my country, we find freedom fighters. They're ready to give up their physical comfort, even their emotional comfort, you know, my wife, my children, all that they're ready to give up to sacrifice for the freedom of the country. But the highest is the spiritual knowledge. And we see in the life of Gautam Buddha, who had all the physical comforts. Emotionally, he had a young, beautiful wife, a young son who was newborn. He had all the pleasures of the kingdom, all the success, everything he had. He was the crown prince. He was going to be king after his father. But he leaves all of that for what? For spiritual growth. So the highest, so for the lower, for the higher, we should sacrifice the lower. So physical, mental, and intellectual comfort should be sacrificed for the spiritual, and that's what it says. But at the same time, these four entities should live in harmony. You know, if you have a lot of physical problems, emotional stresses, so those things one should try to control and take care of, then my spiritual journey will be. So these entities should live in harmony, physical, emotional, intellectual, and spiritual. Then they say that what is important is pratyahar. You know, we know that yama, niyama, asana, pranayam. So these are the four steps, the control of, you know, my body, mind, and how to deal with people. Then asanam is physical exercise, is pranayam is the breath control. Pratyahar is withdrawal. Again, I should slowly reduce my outward, you know, work. It's too much attachment to things and people and too much spending time in work. As most of us are at the stage where we should slowly give up work and spend more and more time in spiritual sadhana, that is pratyahar. And pratyahar, then dharana. Dharana means I should hold on to this knowledge firmly. Then dhyana. Dhyana means meditation, contemplation, abidance in this. And then the eighth one, the eight limbs, ashtang, you know, ashtang yoga is Patanjali's ashtang yoga. Eighth one is samadhi. So complete merger. So I withdraw from the world, do some physical and breathing exercises, reduce my worldly dependence, and then hold on to this knowledge and grow in this. So this idea that the Atma is enveloped, you know, we think, oh, there are five sheets, you know, physical, mental, intellectual, and bliss, you know, vasanas and all. They are not covering the Atma. They are arisen from Atma, but they as though cover, because we have so much attachment to physical, mental, even though Atma is with us. Yeah, so it is as though covered, but actually Atma is infinite. It is all pervading, cannot be covered. But these four sheets, five sheets, can hide our wisdom, just as the cloud appears to cover the sun, even though the sun is millions of miles away, cannot be covered. It is the cloud that is blocking my vision. So these five sheets, physical, the physiological, mental, intellectual, and the bliss sheet, appear to cover Atma, but the Atma spirit is not enveloped, cannot be covered. And then the last point is that Brahma with Brahma eva bhavati, knower of Brahman becomes Brahman. We are already, all of us are Brahman, but knower of Brahman comes to know I am Brahman. Most people don't have this idea. If they have not studied Upanishad, they just say, I am this body, mind, intellect, and my name is so-and-so, or and I'm son of so-and-so, I'm a resident of Bakersfield, I'm a citizen of America or India, or I am male, female, young, old, short, tall. These are all our descriptions. But the knower of Brahman, once he knows Brahman, he becomes Brahman. Brahma with Brahmaiva Bhavati. That's a very important sutra. The knower of Brahman becomes Brahman. You cannot know Brahman as an object. People try to objectify this knowledge. It is not object, it is the subject, it is the knower, because of which everything is known. So this subject, this Atma or I, knows the intellectual sheet, the mental sheet, all the different sheets are known. And through this knowledge of the Upanishads takes us to Godhood, takes us to consciousness, to the state of Godhood. So this is the introduction. I'll just briefly explain the Shanti Mantra. We have heard of it before, but we'll just...
This we do it every
day. We chant it every day. So we'll just... I'll just do the word by word meaning. We'll just chant. You can keep muted and chant with me, with us. Om Sahana Vavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shantihi. So Om, we all know, is Shabda Brahman. It is the word description of Brahman. It is the Lord Brahman himself, the Supreme Consciousness, expressed in a symbol, in a word form. Saha means together. So this prayer is always done by student and teacher together before any spiritual study. This is always chanted together. So teacher and student chant together. Saha means together, with us, together, we two. Saha now. Now means for the two of us. That is, in Sanskrit, it is used as the fourth case, in the sixth case also, second case. So now means the two of us. So for the two of us, this knowledge is there. And they pray to Bhagwan. Om Sahanava Vatu. Avatu means protect us. So Bhagwan, please protect the two of us. Two of us means student and teacher. There may be 50 students. There may be one teacher. But there are two entities. Teacher is one and student is the other. So may the student be protected. Sahanau Bhunaktu. Bhunaktu means may we be nourished by this knowledge. May this knowledge nourish us and may we enjoy the bliss of this knowledge. That is called Bhunaktu. May we enjoy the knowledge, may we enjoy the study. So study should not be done as, oh, something I have to do, but with joy. Saha viryam karvavahi. Viryam means, karvahai means activity. So may we put all our effort. Viryam means may we put all our effort in studying this knowledge. Because this knowledge cannot be studied with half-hearted means. One has to be firmly convinced of this knowledge and then put full effort. It has to be physical, mental, intellectual, all my faculties should be applied in this, studying this knowledge. Then Tejasvi now avadhitamastu. Tejasvi means brilliant. Avadhitu means whatever has to be studied, may my studies be fruitful, may my mind be brilliant. Now, again, our, it's not only student, but also teacher. That means the teacher also should teach in the right way, and the student should also understand. And that includes, you know, sometimes maybe the teacher forgot, oh, where did we stop last week? And maybe, or he omits teaching something, or he repeats something. And more important is for the student that may his mind be available. Saha tejasvi nava dhita mastu and ma vidvishavahai. May we not misunderstand each other, maybe not have any conflict, maybe not have any wrong understanding, wrong thinking about this. So this knowledge should be clear, with clear understanding. There should not be any misunderstanding. There should be complete cooperation between student and teacher. And they are both praying that there may not be any unknown or known problems. You know, that's why at the end they say shanti, shanti, shanti three times, because three kinds of obstacles we all know. Adidaivik is from the divine forces. Adidaivik, adhyatmik, and then adibhautik. Adibhautik is from my surroundings. Could be my family, could be the government, could be the weather. You know, those things interfere. And the third one is adhyatmik, that within me may no obstacles come. May my mind be calm.
Right.
May physically I be healthy. So if I am having some physical ill health, then it becomes difficult to study. So that's why we say all the three factors should be conducive. And while we are studying, may no distractions come. See, otherwise students can sometimes get easily distracted. Their teacher is saying something and their mind is wandering into something else, or what I'm going to do, or what I did, or what happened, what I heard. Or he's talking about Ramakrishna, and they start thinking Rama Rao. Oh, he, you know, borrowed $200 from me last month, and when is he going to return it? So the mind gets distracted. So let the mind not be distracted. Then phalam, may I get the fruit of this knowledge. May I get the fruit. And the fruit of this knowledge is abidance in the self, knowing the self, and then reaching beyond this cycle of birth and death, understanding that I am the birthless self. I was never born and I will never perish. So that is the phalam. That's why they say amritatvam ashnute. You know, in all the Upanishads, they end by that. Even Kathopanishad ends by that. Even Kaivalya Upanishad, amritatvam ashnute, kaivalam ashnute. He enjoys immortality. Immortality does not mean that they will never die, but immortality means knowing that I am immortal. I am that immortal self. I was never born. I never die. And three things are required in knowledge obtaining: reception, retention, and recollection. So reception is that I listen to what the teacher is saying, understand it correctly, and there should not be any misunderstanding, as we have said, ma vid vishavai. So I should clearly understand. Then I should retain it. Not that, you know, if I come next week, I don't remember a single word of what was spoken today. That's why all of us should have the commentary by Pujya Gurudev. If you don't have it, let us know. Harsha Ben can order it. And everybody should have it and must read it either before the Tuesday or after the Tuesday. So then the knowledge will become retained. And Gurudev has done a very nice introduction, which some of the points I covered, but there are a lot more points in Gurudev. So please read his commentary after today's talk. So reception, then retention. I should retain this knowledge. And third is recollection, that anytime I need, this knowledge should be available for me. That is the idea, you know, that if ever I come into a problem or a difficulty, what does Bhagavad Gita say, or what does Upanishad say? What does these teachings say? So the ability to recollect and use the knowledge when required. That is very important. Otherwise, if you have the knowledge, but when you need to use it, we don't use it, then that is
useless.
And then this Shanti Mantra says we should have strength. Strength, not physical strength, but mental strength to give up my old ideas, wrong notions, because we hold on to these. So I should give them up and have the strength to hold on to the new knowledge. I should be focused, and the student should be obedient. You know, that's why when they used to go to the Gurukul, they would stay with the teacher for 10 or 12 years, serving the teacher and doing all the work of the ashram. So the student should have the ability to take instructions. So this is basically this Shanti Mantra, which tells us that may there not be any pramada, may there not be any wrong understanding, ignorance. Ignorance should not be there. And if there are any faults in the student or in the teacher. Generally, teacher, the teachers of the Upanishads were all realized masters, but mostly if the student has faults, may those faults be overcome and may I listen. And repeated teaching of this knowledge is very important, because even though we have understood or remembered it, but when we go out into the world, this knowledge very quickly disappears. So we'll end here. So this is the introduction, and the Shanti mantra of this Upanishad is Om Sahana Vatu. That is the...
Each Upanishad has a different Shanti mantra.
Yeah, each Veda has a different Shanti mantra.
So depending on
Yajur Veda has this Shanti mantra, Om Sahana Vatu.
Krishna
Yajur Veda. So different Vedas have different Shanti mantras. So
and
this
Kotak has different one.
Yeah. So we'll end here. Any questions? Any?
Anil ji, aap meaning of katha zara phir bata denge. I couldn't try.
Katha, okay, has many meanings. One is katha. There was a rishi, katha rishi, who revealed this Upanishad. Also, in the Krishna Yajur Veda, there are different shakhas, different branches. So this is katha shakha. It is explained in the katha shakha. Shakha means branch. So that is second meaning. Third is katha also means distress. When we have any distress or when we have any difficulty, then this knowledge will save us. And that's what happens to Nachiketa, because he's distressed because his father was doing the wrong thing. And then his father tells him, I send you to God death. So it helps us to overcome distress. The fourth meaning, katha, is translated as katha, which does not appear in all the commentaries, but some of them say katha means story. So it is the story of Nachiketa meeting with Yamaraja and getting this knowledge. So four meanings. One is distress, one is shakha, one is rishi, and one is story. So four meanings of katha.
Thank you.
Katho. So Katha Upanishad becomes Katho Upanishad because of the Sandhi rule. Katha Upanishad becomes Katho Upanishad. Any other questions, comments? Yeah, Kerry.
You talked about Vairagya being the first characteristic of the Adhikari. And I was thinking, I kind of remembered something about Viveka being
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, all of them are necessary.
But
Vairagya is the most important. Of course, Viveka, you have to have the discrimination, the knowledge of real and unreal. So it's not that there one is less important than the Mumukshutvam. The Mumukshutvam is last, is the very important. Unless you have an intense desire for liberation, then the Shat Sampati, Shama, Dama, Uparati, Titiksha, Shraddha, Samadhan, they are all very essential. But what the masters tell us, that what we lack is Vairagya. That is what we lack. We may have control of the mind, control of the senses. We may have the knowledge. We may have heard, we have read Upanishads. Now, we have covered three. This is the fourth Upanishad. So the knowledge we have, but what we lack is Vairagya, and that's where we fall behind. That's why they say Vairagya is most important, because we lack Vairagya. Sati, something?
I think I was a little bit thinking about, which came first, in the hierarchy of importance, because somewhere I remember reading or hearing that, if you stumbled, when you're going through the different... the list of things for the Adhikari,
right,
that you should go back to, go back up the steps, and then try to go back through them again. And so I was thinking, I guess I try to keep that in my mind. Okay, go back to Vivek,
But Vivek, we may have the knowledge intellectually, we have obtained it, between real and unreal and all that, but we do not abide in that. And the reason we don't abide is because of lack of Vairagya. It is the lack of vairagya that becomes an obstacle. You may even have control of the mind.
But vairagya can also come from viveka.
Right.
See, they feed each other.
They feed each other, all of them. Yeah. Mumukshutvam will also give you
that
vairagya. When I have an intense desire for liberation, I will leave everything else. So they are all connected. So it's not that one is more important than the other, but we lack vairagya. Even if you have the other qualities, vairagya is the most difficult because to give up is hard. If you tell a human, somebody, you have to give up, he doesn't want like that. He says, I want.
His body, mind, and intellect is also.
Right.
I want a straight answer, a straight path, you know.
No, you have the path, but then you are not able to detach from your ideas, from your concepts, from your, you know, emotions, then nothing will help. So identification with body, mind, intellect is very, very strong, and attachment to the body. So that's why they say vairagya. Does not mean that others are not important. They first mention vivek, vairagya, shat sampatti, and then mumukshutvam. But to me, mumukshutvam is probably the most important, because unless you have an intense desire for liberation, you won't do all the other things. You won't go to a teacher, you won't study, you won't want to control your mind. Why should I control it? Why should I control my senses? Why? Because I have an intense desire. So I think everything is important. But what we lack is vairagya, and through vairagya, you can develop all these other things.
Thank you.
Yeah. But that's a good question. Thank you. Anything else?
Anilji, is it Katha Upanishad or Katha Upanishad, or are they two different Upanishads?
It is Katha Upanishad, but because of Sandhi rule, becomes Katha Upanishad. A and U, when put together, becomes Katha Upanishad, like that. Katha Upanishad.
Okay.
Katha Upanishad doesn't sound good. Katha Upanishad, that is one of the Sandhi rules. When Katha is there with U, then it becomes O. So that is why. It is the same Upanishad. It is called Katha Upanishad because of the Sandhi rule, A and U.
Because it has a T and a H, so that makes a Tha sound. So I'm wondering, is it Katha Upanishad or Katha Upanishad? There's no double T over there. So.
Confusing. No, TH is Tha. Katha Upanishad.
Okay.
Katha, you know.
Does Katha also mean a story?
Right.
Or...
story.
Katha means...
Because it has a story of Nachiketa in it.
Yes. Yes, Nachiketa and Yamaraja. Yes, that's why Katha. But the word is Katha Upanishad because there is a Katha Shakha. Katha Shakha.
Okay. Thank you.
Sharad, you have a question?
I was just going to say, you touched upon the word Anuman, which means inference. And then, you know, then you have the word Hanuman. Hanuman in Sanskrit literally means like broken or protruded jaw. But how did they derive Hanuman, the name?
Hanu means the jaw. The word Hanu means jaw. So that's why the one who has a broken jaw is called Hanuman, like that. I don't know.
No relationship to the name Anuman, huh? Or the word Anuman.
No, it has no relationship to Anuman, no. Hanu means jaw. Yeah,
right.
It has no relation.
Thank
you. Yeah. Satish Bhai, you have a comment? You're unmuted, no? Shaku, you have something?
No, I just said, but you know, one thing I missed was that the fourth thing that you indicated. So Anuman, you know, the types of Anuman. So, Pramana.
Pratyaksha, Anuman.
Pratyaksha, Upama.
Anuman, Upama, then Arthapatti.
Artha?
Patti.
Arthapatti, okay.
Cause and effect. And then
cause and effect, yeah, that's the one that I missed. Yeah.
Yeah, and then absence is called anupalabdhi. Anupalabdhi is absence.
Okay, so arthapatti, the Sanskrit word I missed.
Arthapatti is cause and effect, yes.
Right, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Shaku, you have
question.
I just want to say thank you, Anil. It was a good revision for me of Upanishad again, introduction.
Oh, thank you.
After a long time.
Yeah, so we'll end here. And next week, we'll start with the story of the story itself might take one or two talks, but it's very nice because a lot of mantras in it. And then we'll go into the heart of the teaching from Yamaraj. So we'll end here. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Guru Bhyo Namaha. Harihi Om. Thank you. Harihi Om.